You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground. And I won't back down. I won't back down.
Welcome to episode 6 of Jamie All Over. I am coming to you from the historic Hall of Justice in downtown Los Angeles. And I am so honored to be interviewing today's guest. He was elected the 33rd sheriff of Los Angeles County in 2018, and he was the first challenger to unseat an incumbent in 104 years. He's a 34-year veteran of the department and commands the largest sheriff's department in the United States. He was elected on a campaign of reform, rebuild, and restore. Please welcome Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva.
Oh, thank you, Jamie.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. How large would you say your staff is?
Think about just about 17,000.
Oh my goodness. So you definitely are very busy. So I appreciate you meeting with me like this. So I reached out to you because I am a 13-year resident of Los Angeles, and I'm noticing an increase, as we all are, in crime, as well as the homeless crisis. But before we get to that, can you just give the listeners a little background as to your origin story and how you ascended to become sheriff?
Wow. Well, I come from the East Coast. Born in Chicago, raised in upstate New York, Rochester, 1 year in Queens, New York, and then I was in Puerto Rico, where my dad was born and raised, and I grew up there. And then when I was 19, I enlisted in the Air Force and wound up in San Bernardino. So 1983, I was here in California to stay. Went to school in different colleges, and in 86, I signed up for the Sheriff's Department. I was a deputy, sergeant, lieutenant, rose through the ranks, worked all over the department, a lot of different communities, East L.A., Lenox, Carson, the college bureaus, Pico Rivera. And then in 2017, when I was still a lieutenant, I announced I was going to run for sheriff. And of course, everybody laughed at, there's no way. You can't do that. You can't beat the incumbent. It's never happened in 100 years, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, let's see. And here we are today. So
I love that. And I love anyone that challenges anyone that says that they can't do something.
Mm-hmm.
So good for you. So can you just give us a little bit of a difference between the LASD versus LAPD? What areas you cover versus the police department?
There's a lot of differences, primarily in jurisdiction. As the sheriff of the county, I'm responsible for the entire county. And then all of the unincorporated areas of Los Angeles County has about 1 million residents. Our sheriff's department provides the law enforcement services, you know, answer 911, for example, patrol the streets. That is the sheriff's department's responsibility. But we also contract with 42 cities throughout the county, and we're their primary law enforcement. So that there's 88 cities in the county, so 42 of them are contracts with the sheriff's department plus the unincorporated community. It's roughly 3 million out of the 10 million LA County residents or sheriff's department jurisdiction.
Okay.
Except the challenge is we're spread over 4,000 miles, square
right.
miles. LAPD is the city of LA only, which is one of the 88 cities, but they're only about 480 square miles, and they have 4 million residents. So they're a lot concentrated, but in a very small
right.
space.
So you're covering over 3,000 square miles.
Over 3,000 are our jurisdiction.
Wow.
And we also run the county jail system, which is the nation's largest. The nation's largest superior court system, which is 37 courthouses. We provide the bailiffs and security for them. The LA Community College District, we provide law enforcement presence on our college campuses. And parts of the MTA, the subways, the bus lines, we also provide there. And then we have a special operations and detective division where it's our homicide investigators that covers most of the county agencies. plus all of our homicides occur in our jurisdictions, our fraud, cyber crimes, major crimes bureau, crisis negotiators, SWAT team, Aero Bureau, all those operations.
Wow, that's incredible. So getting to the homeless crisis, what even led me to you was a whole investigation that I did on my own, because I have been really involved in the homeless community. I'm out on the streets. I'm interfacing with them. I'm doing food donations. I co-own a restaurant. So one of the first things that I did was develop a food relief program during the pandemic. And through this, I started talking with them, and a lot of them didn't even want food. They weren't even hungry. It just started getting me thinking, am I enabling or am I actually helping? And I wanted to research this issue even more, being that I'm a long-term resident and I see the problem getting worse and worse. And that kind of led me to follow the money, which led me to the Board of Supervisors.
Oh, and good luck with that.
And then I found you, and I found some of your talks, and it all makes sense. Would you explain to the listeners, what is the situation? What are your obstacles here? What is going on with the homeless crisis? Why has it doubled in 10 years, more than doubled, after $6.5 billion have been spent on it?
Well, what's happened is, I mean, there's some well-intentioned individuals, I think, all along who have their hearts in the right place. However, you can be well-intentioned at the same time as cause a horrific amount of damage, because the more we enable dependency, we're actually condemning people never get out of that situation because we continue to enable it. And as we've enabled it, it keeps expanding. So we're not shrinking the size of the problem. We're actually growing the size of the problem. And in the same process, when our politicians say, well, we don't want law enforcement involved, well, now we're also normalizing delinquency or deviancy, which means it's okay to smoke meth 24/7, roam around the street naked, covered in feces, and no one's going to call anybody. That does not help anyone. Most importantly, that person will eventually die of a drug overdose. Mm-hmm. So we're not saving lives by, let's not get law enforcement involved. There's a place for law enforcement, and that is to regulate public space. And that is to just establish basic law and order. And the activists will say, oh my God, you're criminalizing poverty. You're criminalizing homelessness. No, no, no. Because me as a homeowner, I'm subjected to the same laws as everybody else. It's not being criminalized by who they are. It's by what they're doing. No, you cannot smoke dope 24/7. No, you cannot grab a hammer and run into a jewelry store, smash the display case and walk out with the stuff. No, you can't do all those things that harm people or, you know, deprive other people of their possessions. And that is not criminalizing poverty. That is just establishing boundaries that people need to operate under.
Right. And going back to the compassion thing, mm-hmm. you know, and yes, I'm sure a lot of people were well-minded or well-meaning. But if you follow it through to the end, it's really the opposite of humane. Mm-hmm. These people are dying out there. And through Prop 47, I feel like your hands are almost tied, because it's kind of decriminalizing drugs and having drugs out in the open. Can you tell us a little bit more about Prop 47?
Well, Prop 47 did a number on us, because by lowering the category of crime from felony to misdemeanor on all those different drug charges and possessions, that did a horrible number, because it eliminated the drug courts, eliminated the carrot and stick method that we had to get people into treatment. And I remember when pre-Prop 47, our jails were full of people that were trying to get out and were trying to get into one of those beds, those treatment facilities.
Right.
And they were running at full capacity always. It was a fight to get a bed. Mm-hmm. As soon as Prop 47 passed, a lot of them went out of business. They were operating at half capacity.
Because nobody's willingly going to enter treatment.
Exactly. They're not. They will stay smoking dope 24/7 until they die, which is exactly what they're doing now. We're losing about 5 people a day.
Wow.
Die on the streets of L.A. in the gutter like a dog. And the majority of them are overdoses and people that don't, they're so drugged up or have a mental illness that they will not actually get help for a medical condition that is treatable. But if it's not treated, you die. Say you're a diabetes type 1, insulin dependent, you don't get it, you're gone. And these people will wind up in those conditions and they'll never get the treatment.
Right. We saw you in the news with the whole Venice Beach situation, mm-hmm. in which you stepped in. What made you step in, and what steps did you take over there?
Well, we were receiving letters, emails, videos. There's a YouTube channel that has a lot of stuff on Venice. And one that caught my eye in particular is where homeless people set a house on fire from the back alley where they had an encampment. And the house burned down. There was a dog that burned to death.
I remember
that. And if you hear it, it's just a chilling thing thinking what is happening. And I just said to myself, you know, enough is enough. If they're not going to do anything, let's go see for ourselves. How bad could this be? So on June 7th, I went there with Lieutenant Diedrich, a homeless outreach service team lieutenant, and it was as bad as they said. We saw it with our own eyes, like, wow. And they didn't have to oversell it or anything. We just happened to walk in, and one lady's dragging something, heavy concrete blocks by some kind of a metal wire down the middle of the boardwalk, screaming to herself. Then she starts throwing bar stools at a guy across on the sand. Mm-hmm. And we just walked onto the scene. That's what was going on. It's like, wow, this is bad. The stores, half of them were shuttered. The entire, where the boardwalk ends and the sand begins, that little strip, the entire thing was covered with pop-up tents. All the way down from where Santa Monica ends, all the way to where the townhouse is at the southern end of the beach. That's about a half-mile stretch. It was nothing but pop-up tents as far as the eye could see. And the people that were on the boardwalk were tough-looking individuals, dope dealers, drug addicts, people that are definitely in different stages of mental illness, decaying. Mm-hmm. It's mayhem on the boardwalk.
So what steps did you take to help the situation?
I told them to come back the next day, June 8th, bring the host team there. Let's start doing the protocol, the assessments. That's exactly what they did.
And the host team, it's the homeless outreach services. What is that comprised of? Are there mental health professionals on there as well?
Well, they pair up, and it's what we call a co-response model. We have mental evaluation teams where there's a psychiatric clinician or mental health professional paired with a deputy. Okay. They work in teams of two. They don't drive in a black and white, for example. Mm-hmm. They don't wear sheriff's uniforms, so they're very low-key, and they're part of the team. The LA Homeless Service Authority bring the social workers with them, and they're the ones that do the outreach and try to get the housing and all that, connect the people to housing, to shelter. They work alongside our host team deputies. But our host team, what they provide is security, and they provide safety and a place where people can actually, okay, I'm not trying to struggle to survive and, you know, looking behind my back, this who's going to stab me. Now I can start talking to people.
That makes perfect sense.
You know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you have food, clothing, and safety from the elements, you can survive, but you're not going to thrive.
Right.
Until you have safety and security, then you have the space to start building relationships, establishing, you know, plans, developing plans, and trying to either educate yourself or work or do things that are higher level. But to get to that next step up, you have to have the minimum sense of safety and security in your personal life.
Absolutely.
So the presence of the host team allows for that, and they do the outreach themselves. They're doing the assessments. They get to meet every single person, understand where they came from, how they became homeless, how long they've been there. They track them. They have a very good database, so they know as they migrate around, they come across them, they know who they are everywhere.
It was interesting to me to see that their discovery was that a lot of them fall into a category of nomads or nomadic homeless.
Yes.
They're choosing to live this lifestyle. Is it accurate to say about 40% of the homeless fall into that category?
I'd say 30 to 40% would probably be by choice, because we know roughly 70% is there because of mental illness, substance abuse, or a combination of the two.
Okay.
And when we were on the boardwalk there that day, we talked to a gentleman named Lucius, and he was from Tennessee, or Maryland, then went to Tennessee, and in the summer of 2020, he said, you know, the winters here are harsh. Let me go to sunny Southern California. And he said, hey, I'm a drifter. I enjoy the nomadic lifestyle.
Were you surprised to learn this?
Well, I had heard of that.
Okay.
But actually interviewing someone in person, and he was 22, and he's eating away, I remember those chocolate chip cookies with M&Ms, and he was just covered in cookie crumbs. And just, he was on an office chair that was sitting on the sand, in a pile of pop-up tents. And he said, isn't this great? And people come by and they throw food at him. They throw him clean chonies and a pair of socks, and he doesn't eat anything.
And that would fall under the category of enabling.
Exactly. Hearing that from him, I realized, wow, the people that are designing these plans that don't go anywhere, which I call the architects of failures, they can't even acknowledge that that person exists.
Right.
And that was literally the first people we went to talk on the boardwalk was him and his partner.
Are the quote-unquote architects of failure, are they on the streets? Are they speaking with the homeless?
No. They're locked up at home on Zoom or multiple layers of plexiglass, but you're not going to find them walking the streets or talking to the homeless at all, no.
Logically, it doesn't seem like they should be the ones making these rules then, huh? Or they should at least be in collaboration with people who actually know what's going on.
They should listen to the people with boots on the ground and understand, you know, how the money's being spent, misspent, and missed opportunities. For example, the boardwalk got cleared, but then with the weather, the rainy weather, we got wind that some people trickled back to the boardwalk.
Why is that?
Well, Mike Bonin said, oh, don't do anything because of the inclement weather. It's like, are you kidding me? Did they not learn any lesson from the past? If you ignore things, it only gets bigger.
Right. I don't even know if I want to go into Bonin right now because I want to stay on task. We might have time to bring him up later.
Right.
But getting back to these architects of failure, it's no secret you've been clashing with them. Where are they now? Do they see the issue? Are they open to collaborating more? Where do you all stand?
Well, here's a ray of hope, because what happened to Bonin in Venice, and we went to Westchester Park, and apparently then they had a newfound interest in clearing up Westchester Park after we just wanted to see for ourselves what was going on. I took a photo in front of Bonin's office and posted on social media and pointed at his name, so it was kind of funny. But we had no cooperation with Bonin, CD11, when we were on Venice. In fact, quite the opposite.
For those who don't know or who aren't in the area, he is a councilman for
For District 11, which includes Venice Beach, okay. Playa del Rey, Westchester, a bunch of other communities there. Oh, and all up to Pacific Palisades. They kind of go around Santa Monica. He told the LA Homeless Service Authority not to cooperate with the Sheriff's Department, because LASA split between county and city functions. So the city side of LASA listened to their, so they didn't cooperate with us at all.
Okay.
Now fast forward to Olvera Street. Kevin De Leon's office sent his staffers to work with us to start getting shelter and housing for the people on Olvera Street. So we worked side by side with LASA. It was a pretty large problem, and now it's down to the very last two little strands of street on one side of the street only. So that's a huge improvement.
Wonderful. I have been following that as well, and it was such a shame because their businesses ran on tourism, and they were just so impacted because it wasn't safe to go over there anymore.
Venice runs on tourism. Olvera Street is tourism. Our next destination is Hollywood. It runs on tourism. Mm-hmm. But all three locations have a different manifestation or geographical layout, where some become attractive nuisance and it creates a problem. And other places, like Hollywood, is more spread out in little pockets, and that's going to be a different challenge.
Right.
But we're learning as we go along.
So you brought up LASA. I think they're all part of what you call the homeless industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. Tons of money. If we've actually tracked the compensation of CEOs and boards of directors of these, comparing 10 years ago to now.
Where's
that? Oh, they've skyrocketed. There's one that makes over $1 million a year.
Wow.
One CEO. And these are supposed to be nonprofits.
I know.
And when I looked at them, and in fact, I had a list of all the top ones on one flow chart. And I realized that my organization, we probably have more employees than all of them combined. And my budget obviously is a lot bigger, yet I don't make half of the pay that the CEO makes. And these are supposed to be nonprofits. So it's
exactly.
Like,
and
I'm public sector.
Where's the oversight for all of this?
There is none. That's the sad part. All this money is being spent, $6.5 billion over 10 years, and zero oversight. And it continues with zero oversight.
To my knowledge, LASA was audited, but they were audited by themselves.
Pretty much.
Okay.
That's like Mark Ridley Thomas was indicted by the feds and the Board of Supervisors, decided, well, let's do an audit and let's appoint an independent. I always like to say independent.
Right.
But they're appointing it and they're paying it, so it's not independent by definition.
Right.
It has to be somebody else, because they're going to, like when they do the audit, they'll assign Mr. Magoo to do the audit. He won't see anything. Then they'll hire the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. And they're not going to find anything either. And that's the way the county does their work.
Yeah. I also understand that if they do find anything, they don't release the information anyway.
No. There's two big audits that the board demanded because they thought somehow we were doing something wrong. And they both blew up in their face. One was the spending of prison realignment money, AB 109 funds. Turns out the county's been hoarding money and depriving us of the necessary funds to provide rehabilitative services to our inmate population. And we're desperate for it, and we need it, and we can't get it because they're sitting on it.
Wow.
And the other one was the closure of Mint Central Jail. They hired a consultant, and the consultant said, you can't close it until you have alternative space. So what are they doing? Burying the report.
Wow. So what can be done, you know, when we're in a situation where if the problem that they're trying to solve is solved, they no longer receive funds and huge salaries, they're incentivized to keep the problem going and making it worse. But at what point does the state say, we're not just going to keep throwing more money at this? You need a different solution.
Well, they need to have a reverse incentive.
Okay.
And the incentive should be by regulating and cleaning public space. The more space it is cleaned up, regulated, and the homeless are sheltered, that's what you should pay for. What they're paying for now is a continuation of the status quo. And the more homeless, the more the payment.
Exactly. Okay, so let's move on from homelessness. I think you've shed a lot of light on it. So thank you for being so open with that.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's move on to crime. In addition to a small business owner, I am also in real estate. And I get a lot of phone calls, a lot of issues regarding crime, theft. One of my tenants last night who attends FITM over here, he was mugged, he was beaten up, his keys were stolen, so I had to change the locks, and then his checking account was cleaned out. It seems I can't go a day now without hearing about crime happening. What is going on?
Well, I can tell you over the last 2 years, violent crime, homicides, in particular, assaults with a deadly weapon, those have gone up. Homicides have increased 94% in 2 years,
wow,
which is an astronomically big number. Grand Theft Auto is up 66%, I think, over the same time period. So this is pre-pandemic year of 2019 comparing to 2021.
Okay.
So it was a steady jump 2019 to 20, 20 to 21. It's been just going up in the wrong direction. But the pandemic slowed down other crimes, like burglaries. Everybody's at home. It's kind of hard to burglarize a home full of people. So you can see that. Same thing with robberies. A lot of closed businesses, not that many opportunities to rob. And the same thing with sexual assaults down.
Okay.
More people available, less victims that are alone. The pandemic has kind of altered that, but as that pandemic kind of fades away, you can expect those to return there. But what we do have is an intractable issue with just violent crime driven by opportunities generated by the pandemic. Organized gangs and, you know, criminal enterprises, they're armed to the teeth because we have a DA that's not prosecuting gun enhancements. So now every crook knows, hey, I can carry a gun. I don't have any additional charge imposed on me if I get caught with it. So what's the disincentive? There's none.
So we're talking about Gascon, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I made him heel of the year.
Really?
When I did my Facebook, Instagram live today, We usually do a hero and heel of the week, but we made a special honor for him for heel of the year.
Do you ever have run-ins here? Is that awkward?
No, actually. Well, we have the first, second floor. He has a third floor.
Oh, okay.
And then he has above us the ninth to the 12th floor.
Okay.
But we have the top floor where the windows end. There's no more windows above us.
Oh, interesting. He changed the laws regarding, you know, the whole smash and grab situation. Anything under $1,000 they're not prosecuting for. Is that the issue right now? Because you've mentioned homicides and other crimes are also up. What exactly is going on with that?
Well, what he's done when he came into office, his very first day in office, he released his special orders, a long laundry list of things that he was no longer going to do. And those are things he's supposed to do as a chief prosecutor. And then he ordered all of his deputy district attorneys to abide by those rules. So any discretion, which was normal, job of a filing district attorney at a courthouse, for example, he eliminated all discretion. So no more gun enhancements, no more gang enhancements, no more multiple victim enhancements. For example, we could have a mass murder come in here, wipes out all four of us. It only counted as one murder.
Why?
In his woke ideology, I guess, hard to explain, but he has so sold his soul to the devil on that far, far left agenda that it amounts to nullification of the legislative intent in Sacramento, because he's just eliminating entire categories of crimes. Prostitution. We do reverse prostitution stings. We have undercover deputies, and we arrest all the Johns. Pomona PD did the same thing. We had hundreds of cases. We present them to the DA. No filing.
So it's, you're spinning your wheels. You're wasting your resources for no end. They're just back on the streets again.
That's one problem. The other problem is that in essence, he's legalized prostitution. He's legalized theft because he's not prosecuting. Heck, he's not prosecuting the misdemeanor crimes. We could survive Prop 47 with the assumption that we have an aggressive prosecutor that handles the misdemeanor crimes. He's not doing that either. So in essence, he's legalized theft. If he's not going to prosecute it.
He's definitely incentivized it.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we go from here?
Well, he's going to get recalled. There's a movement afoot that is now very well funded, well organized. The first attempt wasn't very well organized or thought out. Now I think they've learned from their mistakes. Now it's already sitting at the registrar recorder's office, the ballot measure or the petition. And once it gets approved, the final version, they're going to make it public, and it's signature gathering time.
And when is this supposed to happen?
It should happen within the next few weeks, the start of that process. As soon as the petition is made official, they have 160 days to gather roughly 800,000 signatures.
Okay.
And I believe they will make that happen. The city of Beverly Hills just 2 weeks ago voted to endorse the recall of the DA. And last year, 31 different municipalities voted no confidence on the DA. These are historical events.
And it's not Democratic versus Republican at this point.
This is all victim-driven, parent-driven. Anybody who cares about crime and their safety and the safety of their children of schools, they're the ones that are driving this. He's going to try his best to try to sell it as, oh, they're a bunch of Trump lovers or something. But nah, that's not flying.
So I do want to discuss your stance against the vaccine mandates.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why. But can you shed some light on that?
Well, it's real simple. This is just a pragmatic approach to a difficult problem. Unfortunately, the whole vaccine issue has been politicized. You know, we can't cry about the rain being wet. It is what it is. Politicized, and people don't believe in it to the point they're willing to be fired for it. And that, I have to take that into account. The position I'm adopting is the same as a governor's, the same as a president.
And we don't hear about that.
No, you won't hear a word about that from anybody.
Right.
But somehow I'm this evil, you know, the big bad wolf. Oh, my God. But the reality is I have about 1,600 deputies that have 28 years of service or more. And they can walk away and not lose a penny. Say, you know what? I'm done with this.
And you already are understaffed.
I am so severely understaffed. I cannot afford to lose 60 deputies, let alone 1,600. And that is a concern right there. I'm personally vaxxed and booster everything. I'm encouraging everybody to be vaccinated. We just had a meeting now with our executives where we got 99.5% of the department to register to declare to me as the employer either vaccinated or they do not want to vaccinate or they're pursuing exemption. So we got about a little bit over 100 people left that haven't registered yet. So now we're going through the next step, which is performance log entries. And from there, we're moving on to written reprimand if they continue to flout the law. And then starting Monday, we're going to start the weekly testing of all the employees that need to be tested. So we're doing everything we're supposed to be doing, either get vaccinated or get tested. If I were to follow the county's mandate, I'd be looking at losing up to 4,000 deputies, which would be almost half of my workforce.
Oh my goodness.
Which would be insane.
This is another thing of people, it sounds like people making these laws, but they don't follow it through to the end and see what is the outcome, or they don't actually speak with the people that they are enforcing these laws or mandates on to get their opinion.
Oh, because they believe that they're the smartest people in the room. They don't want to listen to anybody else who has a different point of view. And the Board of Supervisors loves to surround themselves with the people that tell them that, you know, the sky is always blue. They won't tell them, you know, reality.
Right.
And when they live in that little bubble, they don't understand their workforce like I understand my workforce. I don't have a captive audience. There might be the county department of human resources or whatever, where you got to work till you're 70, and so they have you.
They can leave with no reaper. Yeah. You know, they can just collect whatever they were going to be collecting, and they're
just
fine.
Walk away.
Can walk away. Mm-hmm. And these are the most experienced people you have.
Yes, they're the
most
top
valuable.
End. These are going to be our senior homicide investigators, our SWAT team members, our pilots, all of our most experienced people that have the institutional knowledge, they're experts, they're national experts in their field. I want to keep them.
As you should, and it makes perfect sense to me.
And then the other side is there's some, I guess, theoretical dishonesty by claiming that somehow a deputy is a threat. Oh my God, if I have to deal with one deputy who may or may not be vaccinated, but I can go to a stadium and scream next to 50,000 fans, I'm going to a restaurant with 100 people and unmask and eat, I go to a mall, and that's not a threat.
Right.
So that there's a dishonesty in the argument.
It seems like there's logic missing. So I would be remiss if I didn't bring out Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. the George Floyd protests, and I would love to get your perspective on all of that, the civil unrest, everything that happened.
Well, we do know this. George Floyd, I called it a murder very early on, and other law enforcement leaders adopted the same language. That was just bad all around. And I just wish the people that were surrounding Derek Chauvin, the other three, had the common sense to get him not to do what he was doing. But, I mean, how much more do you need than seeing a guy struggling to breathe? Mm-hmm. So that, a travesty. But they were held accountable. Black Lives Matter, the concept is fine in concept. But in reality, how it manifests itself is very ugly. It becomes political. It becomes cancel cultural. It becomes a motivation for people to start engaging in looting, rioting, burning. You know, all this take it to the white man or the business district. So let's go after Beverly Hills and Rodeo Drive and the Promenade of San, all these different places where they were targeting chain stores and unfortunately also mom and pop places. You know, many hundreds and hundreds of jobs that were lost on those days of protest. And people want to say, well, we're just trying to get back. And then you had politicians telling local law enforcement, oh, don't do anything. We don't want to offend the looters. Let them vent their steam as just property. No, 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 it's not. That's people's livelihoods that they were just, you know, destroying.
I mean, how do you separate such a powerful and important movement about a senseless crime versus the people who are then committing crimes of their own? How do you navigate that?
Well, we found a way to do it. Actually, it manifests itself in real time because we assisted Beverly Hills. We assisted LAPD in Fairfax. We went to Santa Monica. We were in Long Beach. So wherever we went, we put an end to it. We took the right amount of people to jail for doing stupid things. But we were also standing by and protecting people that were wanted to protest peacefully. Mm-hmm. We had over 20,000 people here right in front of my building. Not a single window was smashed. Wow. And that is successful. Those people were there doing what they're supposed to do, which is protest peacefully, exercise their First Amendment rights. But when you're dressed up like an NFL football player and it's 11 o'clock at night in the business district where there's no one to see you, what are you protesting? You're not. Uh-huh. So those people went to jail.
So, I mean, in comparison to the Rodney King situation, was it 58 people lost their lives then?
Huge difference if you compare 98 to 2020, because in 92, I worked patrol in those days. Yes, I'm that old. Yeah, 58 people were killed. I don't know how many thousands were injured. Over $2 billion in property destroyed. Business burned to the ground. To this day, you can go to South L.A., and you'll find vacant pieces of property that had a thriving either Black or Latino-owned business mm-hmm. that burned to the ground. Mm-hmm. So you fast forward to 2020, we stopped all the nonsense. No one was killed. There was no serious injuries on our part from the Sheriff's Department part, none at all. And we were everywhere. And we did it because we used discretion. Know when to use force, when to pull back, and when to sometimes just to show a force and be in there. You prevent a lot of mischief from going on.
Right.
And it worked.
I have some listener questions for you.
Uh-oh.
You've seen the worst sights and horrors. How do you keep good mental health?
Good question. A lot of tequila? No, just kidding. No, you just got to stay grounded and faith in the man upstairs. He knows what he's doing, or she, depending on what your perspective is. Mm-hmm. Support from my wife, my family, that keep doing the right thing. There's a lot of critics that'll second-guess everything I do or always paint, you know, they're cynics. Mm-hmm. Every decision I make, I'm comfortable with it. It was the right thing to do. And they'll try to make it the most controversial, unethical thing in history when reality is it's the right thing to do. And we have the evidence to show it. We're going to do it. And if someone's offended or steps on some politician's toes, Well, move them out of the way. We'll smash them.
I noticed that for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, you changed your patches to pink patches. Would you ever consider promoting a month of plant-based eating to your staff?
We can support doing it, but it have to be in a different way. It can't be the patch. I think the patch, we have three patches, which is what I'm going to show you.
Okay.
And I think if I go beyond three, I start diminishing the value of each
one.
That
makes sense. So, the month of January, it's in the vegan community, we call it Veganuary, and where we encourage people to who aren't vegan to try it for the month.
Well, if you give us a link, we'll post it on our website and we'll put a little blurb, and we'll also blast it on social media with a link to the website.
That would be wonderful, because the connection, at least between the breast cancer awareness and a plant-based diet, there's been studies that show that just one glass of milk a day can increase breast cancer by 50%.
Oh, boy.
We want to help that as well. Look at those beautiful patches. What do we have here?
This is our patch. And in June, we do the Pride patch.
Love it.
And then October, I think, is breast cancer.
Right.
And then November is veterans.
Love it.
So we actually sell this set, and we do it as a fundraising tool.
I will purchase one.
So
where
this
can
one,
people buy that?
LASDpatch.com.
Okay.
Has these for sale. First year we did this one, we generated in 1 week, and I think $16,000.
For Pride.
For the Pride one. And we donated it to the Hollywood Youth LGBTQ Center for the homeless youth. And this one we donated to the Bell Shelter run by the Salvation Army for veterans. And they made a rec center with the money.
Oh my goodness.
And this one, we've done $400,000 so far.
For the breast cancer
Cancer in the Pomona Valley Breast Health Center. We've funneled our money to them. It pays for screening, mammograms, and treatment. You know, they do the whole operation there.
That's an amazing program.
This is what we've been doing.
That is wonderful. So you are up for re-election this June.
Mm-hmm.
Are you running?
I'm running.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you much luck and much success with that.
Well, thank you.
And I'd like to end on a lighter note.
Mm-hmm.
I know we talked about a lot of heavy and serious subjects, and I thank you for being so open and honest. On a lighter note, I have been choosing a new intro song every episode, and it's usually based on something that comes up in conversation. It will mention a song or an artist, and then that's the song I will choose for that guest. What kind of music do you listen to? What do you like?
I listen to a lot of everything. I listen to Spanish rock, Maná, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to classical rock, Boston in particular, U2, classical music. I listen to some mariachi music. Vicente Fernandez and his son Alejandro Fernandez, and Puerto Rican country music.
Okay.
So I have a wide range of music.
Okay. That will give me a good set of choices there to choose from. So you'll have to listen to the episode and see which one I chose for you.
I highly recommend Tom Petty.
Oh.
And I won't back down.
Oh, my good. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely perfect. I'm so glad you said that. Well, thank you so much for being here. And I wish you much success with your upcoming election. Is there anything you would like to say on any final notes? Anything we didn't hit that you'd like to mention?
No, actually, you covered everything. I know running for re-election is my first time in re-election mode. The political establishment does not want to be held accountable. So I'm perceived as a threat to the status quo. So if I'm a threat to the status quo and they're failing, that means I'm doing my job.
Mm-hmm.
I'll continue to do it. I look forward to the challenge.
I do want to mention one more thing. You have quite a social media presence, which is another thing that you intended to do during this term. And I just want to acknowledge that. I wouldn't be sitting right here if you didn't have an Instagram account and answer to the public. And I know you have a YouTube channel. I did mention you have the Instagram account, which is Alex4, the number 4, Sheriff. And there's also a website, alexvianueva.org. How can people support you?
For the campaign, everything, just the website, alexvianueva.org, or social media, Alex for Sheriff. Job-wise, on the department, we do a Facebook and Instagram Live every Wednesday at around 11. There's a lot of ways everybody can support. You can volunteer at a local sheriff station. You can assist us in the Sheriff's Youth Foundation and all our youth activity leagues. So there's a lot of things that the public can do to help us. People interested campaign-wise, just go to the website and they can find out what to do there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You got it, Jamie.
Bye, guys.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.